Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Hillary, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships for students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in over 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences in Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website, which is www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. Another reminder for those of you who are applying for spring scholarships and internships, all applications are due September 20th. Now, for today's forum, we have strategies for student success in the Utah system of higher education, and our guest is David Buehler, Utah Commissioner of Higher Education. He became the 8th Utah Commissioner of Higher Education in August 2012. For nearly 12 years prior to his appointment, Commissioner Buehler served as Associate Commissioner for Public Affairs with responsibility for government and media relations and overseeing the system's strategic priority of participation and outreach. He also served in Salt Lake City Council as well as a Utah State Senator. So please join me in welcoming Commissioner Buehler.
Thank you, Hillary. Let's see now. If this turned on, doesn't sound like it. Is it on? Is it? You can hear me okay? Okay. Can you all hear me? Okay. It seems like I'm not getting anything there. That sounds better. All right. Well, it's great to be with you today on this beautiful day, and I'm thinking the combination of pizza and dimming the lights in the afternoon. Maybe just a little dangerous, but hopefully it'll all work out. But it is wonderful to be back at the Hinckley Institute. I first got involved with the Hinckley Institute when I was in high school, a long time ago. And then I had the opportunity to teach as an adjunct here and for about 16 years. And most of that time I taught right here in this room. So it's great to be back, and I appreciate you coming out, whether it's for the pizza or me or some combination of the two. As was mentioned by Hillary, I want to talk a little bit about strategies for student success today. And I'm going to start by telling a little bit about what the Utah system of higher education is that you were all a part of, whether you knew it or not. And then at the end, we'll leave plenty of time for some questions. So let's jump into it. Okay. First of all, congratulations to all of you for making the decision to go to college. I assume that you are all students. Are there any here who are students anyplace other than the University of Utah? No, everybody's here at the U of U. Okay, well, I just wondered if anybody else accidentally wandered in. So that's great. You've made a very wise decision. It's very hard work, obviously, to be a college student, but it is going to pay off for you in the long run. And this just gives you an idea. This is some national data, but this shows by area of study and the median income for high school diploma, you know, down to bachelor's degree, and what we call the wage premium. And we like to share this chart because occasionally we will hear the words degree to nowhere. I don't know if you've ever heard that, maybe by a legislator or two. Well, obviously, some areas tend to pay better than others. But you can see that in every area, the wage premium, or in other words, you're going to make between about 50 to over 100% more in your income with some college or with college than you would with a high school diploma. So economically, you have made a very wise decision. And you're all very bright. You can do better than these numbers, I'm sure. But this just gives you an idea of some national data that no matter what your field of study, you're going to do better than if you just had a high school diploma. Also, as far as in some social factors, this is kind of an interesting one. Work volunteering in the community, you can see those with a bachelor's degree and higher, much more likely to volunteer in the community. And, of course, if you're involved with the Hinckley Institute, you are already being engaged in your community, which is a great thing. It's very important for our country and for our state. This is really an indication of poverty. Those who participate in Medicaid, and these are Utah numbers, I believe, you can see less than high school, not surprisingly, are more likely to be poor and to thus participate in Medicaid. So again, you made a smart decision. Just to give you an idea of what the Utah system of higher education is, it is comprised of the public colleges and universities in our state. So they're kind of categorized this way, two research universities right here at the University of Utah. It is our flagship university for our system. It has programs that are available nowhere else, such as medical, law, pharmacy, and so forth. We also have a research university in Logan, Utah State University. They are the state's land-grant university, which means they also have a role in communities throughout the state, including regional campuses where they even provide a community college role as well as an upper division kind of role. Then we have our regional universities, which are, you know, from north to south, Weber State, Utah Valley, Southern Utah University, and Dixie State University, most recently made a university. We have next to Southern Utah University, Liberal Arts and Sciences. They have carved out for themselves a kind of a niche where they provide a residential campus. They're focused on liberal arts and sciences. Now, some of you may be political science majors. There's other definitions of the word liberal. In the conservative community of Cedar City, that's been a little bit controversial. But what they mean is a great undergraduate education. That's what they provide. And then community colleges, Snow College, a small residential college in the middle of the state in Ephraim, Utah. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with Salt Lake Community College here in Salt Lake. Now, one interesting thing about the Utah system that's a little different than other places in the country, these regional universities also play a community college role. What I mean by that is they also provide training in the technical trades as well as associate degrees. In fact, in many cases, they offer as many associate degrees each year, diplomas, as they do bachelor's degrees, if not more. Okay, this just gives you an idea of how many students there are in the system. And we use two numbers, budget-related, full-time equivalent, and total headcount. So total headcount is every person. If they take one class, they're counted. If they take a full load, they're counted. Budget-related FTE equates that to what would be a full-time student. And so you can see at the University of Utah, there's a little bit of difference between headcount and budget-related FTE. That tells you that there's a lot of full-time students here, not as many part-time students. Now look at Salt Lake Community College, you can see there's double the number of headcount as FTE. That tells you there's a lot of part-time students there. And again, that fits in with their role as a community college, being open access and also having technical training for trades and those kinds of things. Okay, this just gives you, from the Utah Code, what the charge is to the system and to the State Board of Regents, which governs the system. I'm not going to go through that, but just to give you an idea. This is kind of the org chart. It looks a little complicated, but basically the way this works is the governor appoints citizens to be on the Board of Regents, also citizens to be on the Board of Trustees at each institution. The Board of Regents appoints the presidents and appoints me. Then you see all these dotted lines going everywhere. In the Board of Regents case and Board of Trustees, and in my case now, they also have to be, we also have to be confirmed by the Senate. And, of course, the governor appoints them. He has to concur in my appointment. This is something that's, again, kind of unique to Utah, that over a third of our students during their time in college attend more than one institution. Just out of curiosity, how many of you have either are now or have been enrolled in another institution besides the University of Utah? Just raise your hands. So a lot. And I know in Salt Lake County, a lot of people are enrolled in both. Right? They may go to Salt Lake Community College to take care of some of their general education. You know, that's a great advantage of our system. The people can move back and forth. And, you know, you can just kind of see now. I don't know who this is, these seven students who've been to seven institutions, but we should at least give them like a frequent flyer card or something. I don't know. But anyway, kind of interesting. As a state, our tuition, this may come as a shock to you as you probably just paid tuition, is actually fairly affordable. The University of Utah has our highest tuition, as you would expect, as the Research One flagship. But compared to their peers, and this is a little bit old, this is the most recent we could get for the Pac-12, you can see that it's very affordable compared to their peers in the Pac-12, and we hope to always keep it that way. I'm going to talk a little bit more about tuition and finance here in a second. Now, some of the things that we're involved in our office and as a system with our institutions that are aimed at student success, I want to just touch on each of these quickly. We talked a little bit about this already as far as transferability. You can start one place, move to another, even if you didn't earn a total associate's degree at Salt Lake Community College. Those courses should transfer quite well. Now, depending on what you're majoring in, there could be some prerequisite issues, but generally speaking, if you take a general ed course, English 1100 is the same any place in our system. And one way we achieve that is we have majors meetings where we actually bring faculty together from each of the institutions to talk about their courses and what the curriculum is and so forth, and so that helps. Tuning Project, this is a national program we're involved in where we're looking at making sure we have learning outcomes for every major and every course of study, that there's specific, that isn't just the time you spent to earn your degree, but that we have identified exactly what you're supposed to learn. And then legislative advocacy, to work together as a system to try to obtain as much support from the state as we can, and that has a definite impact on the cost, your costs in tuition. This just gives you an idea of how things have changed over the last few years in Utah. So in 2008, about a little over a third of the cost was paid by tuition. A little under two-thirds was paid by the state tax funds. Today it's about 50-50. Now what happened between 2008 and 2012? We went into the Great Recession. There were budget cuts. We also added in our system about 16,000 students. That's the size of the campus at Utah State in Logan. And so, of course, as those students brought their tuition, that adds to the tuition side, plus there were tuition increases. Well, you might be interested to know that from these two points in time, we're receiving about $1,500 less per student from the legislature. Tuition increases filled part of that gap, but we're actually educating students today for $600 less per student than we were in 2008. That's not all good, because that can also affect quality, but just to give you an idea that we have tried to not have tuition take the entire place of budget cuts. We've tried, may not be apparent, but we've tried to keep tuition as affordable as we can. Now, I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about college completion. You've all started. Just going to get water going here, which is great, but will you complete? Only about half of our students who enter our system walk out the door with a diploma or certificate. It's higher at the University of Utah. It's more like 60 to 70%. But still, that's a lot of people who started and left without a diploma. I assume that you all are here because you expect to have a diploma. Is that true? Is there anybody who like just wanted to be, maybe you did, just want to come here for the pizza? You know, I don't know. But you can get that a lot cheaper elsewhere. So one of the things that I'm focusing on as commissioner, our board of regents is, and our presidents, is how can we improve the number of students who complete college? And we know that there are barriers to completion. This is based on national data, in particular from Complete College America. We know that time is a barrier. Time is the enemy, as it says up there at the top, that when people take fewer hours than they should, that drags out their time and life gets in the way. Just other things come up and it's harder to finish. Plus the price of college tends to get more expensive every year, so it really makes it tough to complete. We know that, now this isn't true at the University of Utah because they don't have developmental courses, but at most of our institutions, when you come in, if you're not prepared for math, you take a developmental course. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. That delays people and it, often they never make it past that. Too many choices. I don't know if any of you were confused when you started here, or maybe sometimes you still are when it's like, so what courses should I take this semester to get to my goal? Sometimes it can be overwhelming. We want to try to make that more simple for incoming freshmen, that they have a clear path of where, how to get from point A to point B. And of course, there's lots of choices. They can make other choices too, but at least to know what's the roadmap for getting there. And of course, in Utah, we have particular challenges because of the number of people who do leave higher ed for a time to serve a religious mission. That's a great thing to do if that's what they want to do. But it creates some additional challenges for us that we need to be aware of and kind of redouble our efforts to make sure that students have an opportunity to complete. So we're working on some ways to remove these barriers to completion. I want to take just a few minutes to talk to you about them because they involve you as students, things we're trying to do to help you to make sure that you graduate and that you succeed. This just gives you some data. One thing that I'm sure you're learning at the University of Utah is to try to be data-driven, to not go just by anecdote or what your impression or your feeling is or your next-door neighbor, but to really look at data. This comes to us from Complete College America, which is a consortium of states of which Utah is a member that is really focused on this completion issue. And so taking those who started school in 2007 in Utah, you can see those that went full-time, how many, this is for associate degree, how many of them completed in 2 years, which is ideally what it would be for an associate degree, 3 years or 4 years, how many of the part-time completed? There's quite a difference between those who went full-time and those who went part-time. Now, for bachelor's degrees, which would relate more to you, you can see a similar thing. So this, we look at those who entered the system in 2005. Those that completed in 4 years, about 30% of the full-time, 9% of the part-time, and about half in 6 years. Again, part of that is that missionary factor, and only 18% of those going part-time. So those are pretty stark numbers. You know, if these were like right neck and neck, I think we could say, well, it doesn't really matter. But the data are very clear that it does make a difference in how well, how, you know, the chances of a student actually graduating with a diploma. So we have five strategies. The number one strategy is to encourage students to take 15 credit hours a semester or 30 credits a year. So if you wanted to go summer, you could do 10, 10, 10, or 15. That will save you a year's worth of time in completing your degree. That's a pretty good scholarship. If you think about a year's worth of tuition, fees, books, and being able to enter the workforce quickly. One of the states who piloted this in the University of Hawaii, and they found great success that students who took 15 hours perform better, regardless of how well prepared the students were in the first place. That something about taking 15 hours and having to really organize your time because you know you've got limited time to study, it actually, the data show you actually end up doing better. Strategy two is to use plateau tuition as an incentive. Everywhere except the University of Utah in our system right now, you can take 12 hours for the same price as 15. The University of Utah is working on it. There's some real financial implications because, as you probably know, it's totally linear. You pay for every hour you take. And as they figure out how to do a plateau, that could cost them millions of dollars. So they're working on that. President Pershing has committed to me that they are going to try to move there in a couple of years. But for most of the state, this is just another selling point, that if you can take 15 hours for the same price as 12, it's a real bargain. Why wouldn't you do it? Third, creating graduation maps. That goes back to what I mentioned a little while ago about helping students to know, okay, here's what your course of study is. You want to major in history, political science, communications, engineering, nursing, whatever it is. Here's the courses you need to take each semester to get there. We think that would be very helpful for students. This is an example from the University of Utah in engineering. There are programs that already do this. Are any of you engineering majors in here? A few of you. Okay, so you're familiar with this, right? It's not like you're trying to decide every... You like, no. And if I'm going to stay on track, here's what I need to take. And you'll notice none of these are 12 hours either. They're above 15. So it's hard work. But this is the kind of thing that we're going to develop over the next few years for every major. So that whatever it is, that you know, you get that kind of piece of paper and you can say, all right, here's how I get there. Here's my roadmap. Fourth is to improve the success of developmental math. I explained that a little bit earlier, how for students who are not well prepared, they can't get into the University of Utah. So that's not an issue here, but everywhere else in the state it is. And so they have to pay to take courses that don't have credit in order to get up to speed to take what does have credit. And unfortunately, many of them never escape. They never move past that. And so our presidents and their faculty and administrations are working on strategies to help make that transition. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. Five is reverse transfer or stackable credentials. And there's actually, well, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So for our regional universities, they do associate degree and bachelor's degree like UVU or Weber, for example, or even at Utah State. The idea here is that when you've earned 60 credit hours and you've earned enough credit to get an associate degree, the default is automatically you get an associate degree. Then you continue working on to your bachelor's degree. Now, even here at the University of Utah, those students who've started at Salt Lake Community College, there are some agreements now in place that those credits could then also grant you, so when you get, say you had 30 hours there and you get 30 hours here, you could get an associate degree from the Salt Lake Community College, even though you're a student at the University of Utah. They're working out these agreements with the University of Utah, Utah Valley, and Utah State University. Now, there will be some students who, like, I don't want an associate's degree because I'm trying to go to medical school and I don't want it to look like I didn't know where I was headed, you know, and that's fine. But the default would be you automatically get it if you've earned it. This has some great advantages. For one thing, if life does get in the way and students have to find themselves needing to leave college for a while, if they leave with an associate degree, they're going to be much better off than just a transcript of some credit hours. If they move to another state, that associate degree is totally transferable. It's recognized everywhere. So then when they go back to a university, they can start as a junior rather than, well, University of Utah, we're in Indiana, let me look, I don't know, maybe we'll count that, maybe we won't. See what I mean? So it's a real advantage to students, and it's something that we're working very hard on because we think it will help students be more successful. Going back to 15 to finish, we're going to be launching a little bit of a PR campaign. Hopefully you'll be seeing some posters like this, some other things to encourage you. Now, again, we know some people, they just can't do it. If they're working 40 hours a week or, you know, they just cannot do 15 credit hours, we get that. But for those who can, it makes a lot of sense. You probably all heard about the 66% goal. That's a very ambitious goal for our state. But obviously, to get there, we're going to have to significantly increase the number of graduates. And this just kind of shows you the incline there. You are the 66%. I don't know if anybody knows this young woman. She's a student here. But we just want to encourage you to, now that you're here in college, to make sure that you have a plan to finish. And so that's what that's all about. Okay, we're ready for questions. And I've got some handouts for you, too. I'll hand out when we're done. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, back to Hillary. I didn't mean to, like, just take over, Hillary. Sorry.
My name is Tyler Glauser. Mm-hmm. And my question is, how does the completion rate in the Utah system of higher education compare to universities in other states? And if it is different, why?
Yeah, that's a great question. It depends on who you compare to, but basically the best way you can gauge, the way you can have the highest completion rate is to have the highest entrance requirements. So like a Harvard probably is 99% or 99.9% who complete because they are so well prepared and so motivated that, you know, they're going to finish. The same thing applies if for our institutions which are open access, which are everywhere in Utah except the University of Utah, where if you apply, you get admitted, it's going to be lower. So our completion rate, because of the open access, if you compare us to open access institutions, we're pretty comparable. But compared to those that are more selective, you know, in our state, BYU, very selective, they have a higher graduation rate because, again, you really have to be prepared to go there. The U of U is making strides to move more that way, so the students have to be more prepared. But we're not where we need to be. I mean, to me, I'm not happy to think that about half of our students leave without a diploma in the system. That is not where I want to be. So we need to do better. Okay, another question over there.
Hi, my name is Vivian Nguyen, and my question is, why do we decide to have an open access campus versus a more selective campus?
That's a great question. There's some good things about open access, so let me talk about that for a moment. One of the ideas of open access is a second chance. So for particularly a Salt Lake Community College, their average age of student is somewhere over 30. Well, that tells you that a lot of people are there because they went from high school into the job market, and they've decided, wow, I need to get some more training. You know, or maybe it's a woman who got married young, and now she's divorced, and she's got a couple kids, and it's like, I've got to get more training so that I can support my family. And so that's the role of open access, is to allow second chances. And so that's really, in a nutshell, why you have open access. On the other hand, I think that in Utah, we've tended to not have as high of standards as we should. And thus, I'm sure none of you were like this, but sometimes we hear about high school seniors figuring that is their sabbatical year. They have earned a rest. They don't really need to work that hard as a senior. They don't need to take math as a senior and so forth. Well, that doesn't prepare them very well for college. And so we need to raise the bar everywhere in public ed and higher ed so that students know, hey, get well prepared. Use your time in high school well so that when you hit college, you are ready to roar and move forward. That answer your question? Okay, great. Yes.
My name is Brianna Johnson, and with 15 credits, that adds a lot more stress to a student's life. And so are you guys thinking of doing any programs to help deal with the stress if 15 credits is the goal?
Well, from a system level, no, to be honest with you. So we're not sending out teams of psychologists or social workers or whatever to help. I don't want to minimize that. It could be more stress. But it's something that is, for many people, is very doable. Again, you've got to judge your own individual circumstances. And I don't mean to judge it for you. I don't think I had that slide that showed what percent did I? All right, let me pass this out then. Because this will show you. Oh, actually, it's not on here. Oh, yes, it is on here. It's on the back. Thanks, Marie. Thanks. Oh, thanks. And Maria will help too. I'm going to keep one just so I can refer to it. When you get this, if you look at the back side, you'll see what percentage of our students in our system today are between 12 and 15. You can probably even see it's this big bar. So most of our students are taking within one class of 15 credit. Now, if most of our students were here on the left at, 1 to 5 or even 5 to 11 or 6 to 11, I'd say, wow, this is really a big stretch. But where we're so close, I think it's very doable for many students. Not for everybody, but for many. So this will give you some, and I'm also giving you some sources there if you want to look up the data for yourself. You can see, and these are the graphs I showed you before on the front. Yes.
Hello, I'm Stephen Willis, and you had mentioned earlier about keeping tuition down. Is anything going on at the state level to keep tuition lower?
Great question. It's something that we struggle with every year, and there's a direct correlation between how much the legislature is able to fund higher education and how much we end up relying more on tuition. So the main thing we're doing is working with each of our presidents and with their staffs and my staff to work with legislators to help them understand the importance and the value of supporting higher education. Because the more they're able to support it, the less we raise tuition. Now, obviously, legislators also need to fund K through 12, public ed, a myriad of other things, not just higher education. We understand that, but it's just a simple fact. If you look around the country, the states where legislatures put more in, tuition is lower. States that fund, we're at about 50-50, like I said. There's a lot of states that are now down to the state funding maybe 10 to 20%. Those are the states where at public universities the tuition is above $10,000, maybe even approaching $20,000 a year, and where you're reading about students leaving with humongous debt. Well, that is directly tied to how much state support they have or don't have. So that's something, and you as citizens can also help, you know, working through ASUU and their representatives to help get the word to legislators that please help support higher education, because that is almost like a one-to-one relationship, state support versus tuition. So, yes.
Yeah, my name is Connor Hafen, and I just was wondering what the specific process of, like, the budget allocation for the university system is like, you know, how much the legislature is involved as opposed to you or the Board of Regents.
Yeah.
And also, there's been controversy mostly in secondary education, but also in other, like, universities about funding for athletics and the appropriate role of athletic programs and the amount of funds that they receive. So I was just wondering your thoughts on that.
Yeah, great questions. Well, we're writing the budget process right now. So let me tell you what our process is in Utah. The Board of Regents has the responsibility to present to the governor and the legislature what's called a unified budget request that treats each of the institutions equitably and a request for the entire system. And so our process is, I started in July meeting with our presidents saying what should go in our request and getting their input on what are the items we ought to ask for. And then I met with them two more times in August trying to work out what they would support. Once I had their support, I made my recommendation to the Board of Regents that actually we'll be voting on the budget this Friday, our budget request for 2014 legislative session. Now, when the legislature, of course, then they have their own process where they, you know, have hearings and look at everything. They actually appropriate about 99% of the money directly to the institutions. So it's not like it comes to the Board of Regents in a big glob, and then we say, okay, we're going to give this much to the U, this much to Weber. They actually appropriate it directly to the institutions. But we have some influence in and they look to us like, well, how is this fair, and how does this work for each institution? I can tell you it's a real challenge because every institution could use more money. There's no question about it. And it's like, well, what are the highest priorities for the system, and what are the issues that need to be addressed this year? Of course, we also get some input from legislative leaders along the way of what are they expecting us to do, what are they looking for, also from the governor. So it's kind of a complicated process that way. Once we get into the legislative session, I think we'll do this again this year. We did it last year. Every couple of weeks, we had a meeting at the Capitol with me and the eight presidents, and we would invite legislative leaders to come in and meet with us. And when you can get all these presidents together, it's pretty impressive to legislators because they're not like, don't fund Weber, fund Utah, or don't fund Utah State, fund UVU. You know, but when we can be combined in our efforts and have a unified voice that this is good for the whole system, it can be very powerful. Now, I can't tell you that happens 100% of the time, but that's the goal, is to have us unified and working together. Now, on athletics, that is controversial around the country. In most places in our state, if not all places, I'm not exactly sure. I think the U may pay its own way because of Pac-12 and football revenue and basketball revenue and so forth. But in most places, it is subsidized, well, number one, student athletic fee, even in the U, but also by taxpayers. And so I know a couple years ago I had a legislator who told me, we're going to stop the subsidy for athletics. I'm like, good luck. You know, it's something, and maybe 20 years ago we had a president at one of our universities during a budget downturn who said, we can't afford football anymore. I mean, he was almost run out of town. So a lot of this is what do the public expect, what do they want, and what are they willing to help support and pay for? So that's about the best answer I can give you, I think. But, so when you're in the legislature, if you wanted to fund it, good luck. I'd say the same thing to you. Okay, yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry. I'm Nick McKean. My question is kind of about something you said with regards to the U. You said that there's considerations to make it a more selective school. Mm-hmm. What would be some of the interventions to help it, I guess, be more selective?
Yeah. Well, it would be, you know, they've gone to a different admission process, which I think is very good. It's a lot more hands-on. It used to be that they used an index. So basically they would look at your high school GPA and your ACT score, and then you could look at, in fact, it's even on the website. I don't know, maybe some of you did this when you were applying to the U. You could say, all right, so here's my number based on those two numbers, GPA and ACT, and Do I fit in the range for the U or not? Now they're taking a more holistic approach where they actually look at your transcript in high school. Like, did you get straight A's because you just took the easiest classes possible? Or did you take harder classes and maybe you got some B's or maybe even a C here and there, but you were taking physics and, you know, chemistry and things that are really hard, so that can be taken into effect. So I can't really get more specific than that, but that's the kind of thing where it's like we're not just admitting everybody, but we're going to admit, we're going to really go after the students who are well-prepared, are the best prepared, and who have shown it in their high school, you know, in their high school transcript as well as their ACT. So, yes.
Hi, my name is Feifei Peng, and my question is, what's the perspective on international student in Utah? I've noticed international student, they pay like 3 times higher tuition than local people.
Yes.
And at undergraduate level, there are not a lot of scholarship available for non-citizen students.
That is a great question. And first, if you are an international student, thank you for paying that tuition. At least you deserve a thank you from the Commissioner of Higher Education, right? So you've got it. Basically, the idea at most state schools around the country is that the taxpayer subsidy from the local taxpayers is for the residents of their state. So whether it's international or out of state, there's a differential in tuition. The difference between international, particularly in Utah, is that international students can never become Utah residents. You're international, you've got a student visa, and you are welcome here. We love having you here, but you are paying the higher tuition. Where our residency laws in Utah are such that if you have an inclination to become a Utah resident, it's not too hard to do it in a year or so. And so then you can lower your tuition to the resident level. But international students are vitally important in providing a greater experience for the students who are residents to be able to mingle with people from other countries as well as other states, other cultures, other backgrounds, is very important to the university experience. One of the things that I found really interesting and I really commend is the president of one of our, well, I'll just tell you who, at Dixie State University in St. George. You know, pretty isolated community in a lot of ways, though this is on I-15, they have an airport, but he has really made an effort the last few years to attract both international as well as out-of-state students that are more diverse than the native, you know, kind of homegrown St. George, Washington County population. And he told me the reason is because he's trying to prepare graduates to go out into the world. They're not all going to live in St. George their whole life, and that they need to be exposed to people with other ideas, other backgrounds, other experiences, and so it is really important. We go to graduate education. Graduate education scholarships is a real challenge for us because of our funding. And part of the history of Utah higher education is probably going back to when University of Utah was founded in 1850, I believe. We have always done more than we can afford to do. And that is true everywhere in the system, that we have high aspirations, we're motivated. We want to, you know, we want to be a university. We want to be a, you know, we want to be a research university. We want to be in the Pac-12, and we're not really funded for as well as we should be for any of those things. So that's just kind of, I'm not trying to make an excuse. I'm just trying to explain that is sort of the history of Utah, that we try to do more than objectively we really can afford to do. But that does create a problem for graduates and other students who are seeking scholarships. There's no doubt. It's not where we'd like it to be. Yes.
Hi, my name is Remington Carlson, and I took some AP classes in high school, mm-hmm. and I'm curious as to how taking college classes or college equivalent mm-hmm. classes in high school relate to potential diploma earning.
Yes.
And also what the U itself actually, like what efforts are concentrated towards having high school students focus more on that.
Great question. AP, I think, is a great preparation for college. And I've had several children who've taken AP classes, and sometimes they've done really well on the AP test, and sometimes I could tell they really hadn't worked that hard, and they didn't do that well. But sometimes I think it's maybe a little bit oversold for the college credit you're going to get. I would look at it more, you're going to maybe get some college credit, get some hours out of it that will help you towards graduation, but I think the more valuable thing is that you're taking rigorous courses in high school that are preparing you for college. And each university or college decides how much credit they're going to grant based on that AP score. And I'm not sure exactly what it is at the University of Utah. You need to talk to somebody here in their administration. But I think the right way to look at AP, and same with International Baccalaureate, is those are great high school programs to prepare you, and you may get some college credit as a bonus, rather than, wow, I'm going to do this and earn a lot of college credit. Now, we also have in Utah, we're like one of the leading states in concurrent enrollment. How many of you took concurrent enrollment in high school? Yeah, I'm not surprised, a lot of you. That's good. And most concurrent students in Utah take two or three classes. There are some who like take lots of classes. Theoretically, you could even earn an associate's degree, but it's really hard by the time you graduate from high school because you're only supposed to take concurrent as a junior and senior, so that's a lot of classes to get in. But that can be a benefit because you come with that college credit. One thing that we're trying to do, though, is to make sure that concurrent enrollment courses are focused on general education and not as many electives. Because one thing we've found through the years, sometimes students and their parents would feel like, wow, I'm going to load up a lot of concurrent and I'm going to come in as a sophomore or a junior. Well, the credit is accepted, but it may not apply to their degree, right? If they've taken a lot of electives or something, well, that's great. Okay, congratulations, you've got 15 or 18 hours of credit, but they don't really apply to what you're majoring in so much. But if you can take it in general ed, then you really are making progress, that you come in, it's like, okay, check that box, check that box. And again, it depends a little on the major. If you're in a more technical major like engineering, they probably will still want you to take their math class, not the one you took in concurrent enrollment. But so there's always some complexity. But in general, that will help you the most in high school if you take general ed, college general ed as concurrent enrollment. Hopefully that's what most of you raised your hands did, that you found it helped you. That's the idea, to help you. Okay. Next question. Yes.
Hi, my name is McKenna Nielsen, and I'm just wondering, like, so if the U were to become a more selective school, how would that affect the number of students that would attend here and the tuition rates?
That is a great question. I think that their goal would be to try to keep the number of students about where it is. And so this is, I think, why you don't see a gradual change rather than, wow, we're going from here to here in our admission and all of a sudden enrollment drops down. The other thing is the University of Utah has an obligation, and they take many transfer students from Salt Lake Community College. And particularly if you come with an associate degree, you're in. You know, so I don't think you're going to see anything drastic, but I think over time they're going to raise their standards. And I had a meeting just yesterday with our state superintendent and the chair of the State Board of Education, along with the chair of the Board of Regents and some other folks. And we're always urging them to raise the bar in high school so we don't have this kind of wasted senior year where, you know, and I've seen this with my own kids where they're like, hey, I've got enough. I've done everything I need to do to graduate, and I still have like a year left or 6 months left. And some of them I've urged, well, why don't you do early graduation and get started? No, it's too much fun. You know, I need to be an acapella, and I need to, which are all great things, but it'd be nice if everybody was using their 12 years in high school to maximum advantage. That would help us as a state.
Yeah. Hi, Scott Myers. I was just wondering, when you talked about how other institutes were able to make it 15 credits for the same as 12, mm-hmm. and how come they didn't lose millions like you were saying we would if we did?
Yeah. Well, it's just the way that they set up their tuition. They already had it in plateaus. And so many years ago, the U went to just a linear model. So every hour costs more. So it's now moving, is that transition from linear to plateau that they've got to look at, well, wow, we don't want to like take a huge financial hit and then have to raise everybody's tuition to cover that. You know, so I mean, it's complicated for the U, but hopefully they'll be able to get there. But I didn't modify my message too much today. That's my message statewide, because most places, still at the U, you'll save 1 year. That's worth, what, about $7,000 in tuition for an in-state or Utah resident? So, I mean, that alone, that's pretty good motivation. But, yeah, so anyway. So there's still some financial incentive there. But for the other schools, there's even a little more because it doesn't even cost them more to take 15 than it does 12. So.
Dave, hi. Tim Chambliss, yes. I teach here. Observation, one out of two students actually leave here with a degree. Observation in my large American National Government classes, three-quarters of the students still live at home as teenagers, freshmen, right. Sophomores. I have observed, as someone who has had international students live in his home since 1980, 19 different countries, a lot of students. I have two from China, one from Japan right now. They're very often, international students know more about us than we know about them, but more so, very often they know more about us than we know about us. They come maybe motivated more.
Right.
They know the foundation documents. Maybe their spoken English is not as great, but their written is quite competent. And so our problem really looks like for higher education is deeply rooted in high school. That the message has to be conveyed that it's a full court press all 4 years.
Right.
So you come to the University of Utah fully prepared to do very well, starting as a freshman, and not make the freshman mistakes. How do we get that message across governmentally and also economically?
Great observation and question. We're trying by a few things. One is a few years ago, we started the Utah Scholars Program. I'm wondering if any of you were Utah Scholars in high school. Any of you apply for and receive the Regent Scholarship? Bunch of you. That is tied to Utah Scholars. The Regent Scholarship was an effort by our office starting in 2008 to say, get well prepared in high school. Take 4 years of math. Take science with a lab. Take physics. When we started this, sad to say, I don't think here in Salt Lake County, but in other parts of the state, there were school districts that had stopped teaching physics. Well, now they have to teach it in order for their kids to qualify for the scholarship. So that still is a relatively small number of students out of the state, maybe a couple thousand out of tens of thousands who graduate from high school every year. So that's one effort we're taking. Another initiative out of our office is each year we host a conference for high school counselors where we bring them together and try to help them to know how to advise students to be prepared for college. We may become more vocal. It's a little controversial, but we may become more vocal of what is really necessary to be prepared for college. Because I think an assumption that I certainly made before I learned better was that if you have qualified to graduate from high school, then college must be like 13th grade, that you are prepared. But unfortunately, our high school graduation requirements are like there. And so there's a gap. You can graduate from high school in Utah without necessarily, but not necessarily being really ready for college. And we need to help people understand that don't be satisfied that, okay, I completed the high school graduation requirements, I am ready to roll, without doing more work than is required in high school. Then you're really prepared.
Okay, so that was all the time that we had. So if you want to join me in thanking Commissioner Buehler for his time today, thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks. All right.